There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1206 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Wednesday as the eyewall of Hurricane Michael is coming on shore right now in the Florida Panhandle. And let's go straight to staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for more information on that. Dr. Bill, what's the situation as of right now?
Well, Sean, the winds now are up to 150 miles per hour.
Wow.
At the last reconnaissance, and that was done a little while ago. And yes, it's just about to move on shore. In fact, once the center of the eye moves across the coast, then it's officially on shore. But at the moment, the eye wall, which is really huge, that's the wall of high winds and right around the eye. Part of that is onshore and affecting Panama City. And it looks like the center will go over probably Mexico Beach, a little bit to the east of Panama City. But that area from Panama City to Apalachicola is really getting the brunt of the hurricane.
Looking at the radar loop right now, it's almost like something out of one of your textbooks, Dr. Bill, in the shape of this hurricane. It is well-formed and pretty significant from side to side here. I mean, I know that's not all hurricane strength winds, but we have effects down at St. Mark's towards Tampa and effects in Pensacola and Baldwin County.
Yeah, it's a classic circulation, and the storm surge right now is, of course, affecting everything from Mexico Beach all the way around to Apalachicola and over to St. Mark's, which is just south of Tallahassee. That area generally gets some pretty high tides with a storm because it is a concave coast, and the water really piles into that region. But the big heavy bands around the storm now are reaching up into the interior of the panhandle, and a lot of those rain bands now are all the way up into Albany, Georgia. So that area of southwest Georgia is going to get hit pretty hard, because that's where the center of the storm will end up this evening, and through the nighttime hours, it'll move up into southwest Georgia. And it will not be 150 miles per hour anymore, but they're still going to get hurricane winds in that area.
So as far inland as Albany, Georgia, still above 74 miles an hour?
Yeah, they're going to get at least gusts getting up to hurricane force in places like Bainbridge and possibly even up into Albany and some of these squalls.
There are a lot of people up there, also a lot of trees up there, and I see winds like that. If you get some rain on top of it, we could have I'm expecting a lot of trees down out of this storm.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of trees down across the panhandle, and the wind velocities here are just tremendous. And it's not unusual in these storms, too, in some of these big thunderstorm bands for the even higher velocity winds aloft to be brought down to the surface. So sometimes, rather than a continuous swath of damage, you'll see areas of damage, and then another couple of hundred yards away, hardly anything happens, and then another mass of higher altitude winds will drop down to the surface. And that tends to happen a lot of these hurricanes, where the stronger winds, which are above the surface, maybe about 1,500 feet or so, they'll be brought down to the surface in these thunderstorms.
I mean, something that, to an uneducated eye, might look like a tornado bouncing, but
It looks like tornado damage, but it's really just bringing down the higher altitude winds here up at 1,500, 2,000 feet, and these thunderstorms being brought down to the surface.
You know, you're talking about the storm surge. I want to get into kind of narrow down on that one. But you've taught us over time you get an amplified effect for storm surge when you go in one of these a bay or a cove or something like that. But in the broader scheme, the Big Bend of Florida, that corner of the Gulf there, is a bit of a giant cove itself, right? So that, I mean, does that amplify this even more?
Oh yes, yeah, definitely. But we see all kinds of interesting effects going on. For example, right now, the Apalachicola River, which flows out next to the town of Apalachicola, and it's backing up now because now the water is surging in, so all the waters of the Apalachicola River, which is pretty big at that area, it's now just flooding that area.
Now, I looked at some after we had talked this morning. I did a little digging and looked at, you were talking about how flat that area is, and I looked at some of the elevations. Apalachicola, the town of Apalachicola, is 13 feet. I guess that's the high point, at 13 feet above sea level. I mean, we're talking about, you know, not the outlying properties. We're talking about the city center. I mean, this, yeah, they're going to have water through town.
Yeah, and we're looking at least 13, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see some higher values than that, 14 or 15 feet in some places to the east of the center. And but it's very close now to officially being onshore, and I believe that is around Mexico Beach.
And still at the wind speed now, it will make landfall as a Category 4?
Be a Category 4 unless there's other information that comes in here in the last 30 minutes or so. But on the western side, of course, everything is offshore. So we go over to Destin and Fort Walton Beach. Some strong winds now and big bands of thunderstorms, and it's forcing water away from the coast. And Pensacola has northerly winds now with some of the feeder bands. It looks like we may escape most of that here in Mobile and in Baldwin County. You really have to get over to Pensacola now to experience some of these heavy rain bands.
And will they? So they're now going to pull off to the east and north. That, I mean, is this the high point of its movement to the west for us for rain? Or is there more coming for our area?
No, that looks like. That may be the worst of it, of those bands that are going to be in Pensacola. And it's possible that over the next few hours we may see some of those rain bands that are now affecting up in Monroeville and Bruton. We may see a little expansion of that. It may come back down into Baldwin County, perhaps into Mobile, but that'll be through the afternoon hours. But the heart of the storm, of course, is heading off now to the northeast.
All right, so it's moving at a fairly decent clip. It was today, 12, 13 miles an hour earlier?
Yeah, 12 to 13 miles an hour. That's normally we look at about 8 to 10 as an average speed, so it's a little faster than normal. And that will most likely continue through the afternoon and evening. Eventually, when it gets on up into Georgia, it'll start accelerating and pick up its speed. High-altitude winds will then start to drag that storm off at a faster speed off to the northeast.
And it does carry the moisture, it seems like, from some of the reports here, up through the Carolinas. So they may get more rain on top of that already saturated ground up there post-Florence.
Well, yes, in fact, rainfall totals of 5 to 8 inches will be common up through central Georgia. And I think we'll see some of those figures on up into South Carolina, particularly through central portions of South Carolina around Columbia. And then in North Carolina, most of the rain will be in the eastern portion, and then it'll move offshore. In the area now around Panama City and a little to the northeast of Panama City, we'll see some rainfall totals there, most likely in the double digits, 10, 11, 12 inches.
This is obviously with the Category 4, it's a big storm, but like you said, it's you look at it, it's textbook in its view, the eye so well-defined, and, I mean, this is, this is going to be an expensive storm. I mean, I don't even start to calculate, but, if it starts there along a fairly built-up area of the Florida Panhandle and ends up going up through the Carolinas, this could be another very expensive storm.
Yeah, and then, of course, the southern portion of the eye still has to go through, and it's pretty powerful. And that'll be coming onshore probably within the next hour or so, and sweep across Mexico Beach and all that area between Apalachicola and Panama City will be experiencing, most of that area will experience the eye wall.
All right.
Either the edge of it, or they will have the eye wall twice.
Yeah, they'll get it.
Yeah.
Kind of reminiscent, like we talked about this morning, Mobile during Frederick. You got the first punch, you got the eye, and then you got the second punch.
That's right.
Wow. All right, Dr. Bill, thank you for the update. We will check back with you very soon for more on Hurricane Michael.
Okay, Sean.
All right, staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams joining us right here on Midday Mobile as we get started. When we come back, we'll go to the president getting briefed on Michael as well. That happened just a few minutes ago. We'll get that audio. Also, what a neat thing we have coming up here in the second half of the hour. American hero for sure, and a man who is coming to speak here in Mobile at the Policeman's Gala coming up. We'll tell you more about that in just a few. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1220, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And a lot of stuff coming in on the text line here. Tyndall Air Force Base, yeah, right in the eye of the storm as Hurricane Michael Category 4 makes its way on shore. The northern eye wall has made it onto shore. Of course, you have the southern eye wall to come on that. We'll talk more about that coming up. Also, Michael Durant, as in Black Hawk Down, is going to join us in the second half of this hour. First, though, let's get an update. This is FEMA directors updating President Trump from just about 30 minutes ago.
It's about 40 miles off the coast. It's starting to feel the effects now. It is a very dangerous Category 4. And just to remind the press, hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria were Cat 4s. These are big storms that we're looking at. So it'll hit the panhandle, as you can see in this one right here, sir. And then it will go through Georgia and the Carolinas. Unfortunately, on the tail end, we do expect additional rain in the Carolinas, which could lead to additional flooding. FEMA's leaning forward, as we are with our interagency partners. We're forward deployed. We have search and rescue ready to go. We're in very close contact with state and local authorities. We've all spoken with the governor and local officials. And I'll turn it over to Brock to give additional
Thanks, Secretary. Unfortunately, this is a Gulf Coast hurricane of the worst kind because all of the elements associated with hurricanes come into play. So as you see on the left, the storm surge estimates are anywhere between 9 and 14 feet. Storm surge is going to be the worst where the eye makes landfall, just to the east or south of where the eye makes landfall. Somewhere right now, it's projected between Panama City, Apalachicola, and then it's going to push forward. So not only is it going to bring 14 feet of ocean water and coastal flood inundation, there'll be wave action on top of that, which is the primary driver of why we evacuate, sir. And then coupled with that, you've got over 145 mile per hour winds. Structures built before 2001 are not designed to handle that type of wind typically. And it's going to unfortunately push through the state. So we're asking citizens in Southwest Georgia, Central Georgia to be vigilant and make sure that they understand what's about to come, because this area is going to see a Cat 1, Cat 2 storm as it moves inland. And with the vegetation there, what we're anticipating is a lot of downed trees impacting the power grid. And, here again, we're going to see a lot of devastation along the coast structurally. And then as it moves in, you're going to see power outages throughout the state. And then, unfortunately, you're going to see rainfall into South Carolina and North Carolina. The Cape Fear was projected to start receding from Hurricane Florence 2 days ago, and this will basically exacerbate the problem and add to it a little bit to where it's going to keep those waters from receding a little bit as it exits the state by Friday.
So they're reporting that this is one of the most powerful hurricanes ever to hit our country. Is that actually a fact?
For in this area, this would be the most intense hurricane that struck this area since 1851, if I remember correctly. So this would be
a big storm.
Yeah. Intense, very intense. But
and this one is going to be heavy rain, or is it going to be the winds that are going to be the problem?
Storm surge and winds. And then for Georgia, they're going to see high inland winds. So you may see sustained Category 1, Category 2 winds with higher gusts that are associated. So We're expecting a lot of damage inland as well. But we have leaned forward with Governor Scott and his staff and Director Wes Maul down in Florida. They've been leaning forward as well. And, you know, right now there's no identified shortfalls when it comes to pre-positioning. So we have teams, equipment, personnel, not only with and embedded with state of Florida staff and some of the local county emergency managers, but we have equipment and teams staged in Maxwell to Atlanta to Orlando ready to move in once we can, once the elements subside and push through, and then we can move in and attack.
And we're working really closely with the private sector. So we have about 14 states, different utilities from 14 states are already ready to help with any energy outages.
Collective companies are from all over the country, actually. They're all lined up. As soon as it goes by, they're going to be working. And we've got food supplies, food chains. We're working with all of the states. And let me ask you, this started out very innocently a week ago. This was a small storm in an area they never thought this, and it grew into a monster.
Right, so the first initial indications from the National Hurricane Center started coming in around Saturday, and they picked it up and started raising the flag that, hey, this system's gonna go from a wave to a depression and could potentially rapidly intensify. And unfortunately, that's typical of the Gulf Coast, and when they do this, you know, citizens have less time to prepare or heed the warnings. We are concerned that many citizens chose not to heed those warnings, but we're prepared with search and rescue teams to try to go in and do what we can.
Any questions, please?
Yes. Are you concerned that people in Florida and Georgia in the storms have
Yesterday, we were concerned that we did not like the level of evacuation activity that we were seeing. And, you know, Governor Scott, kudos to him. He leaned forward, used the new wireless emergency alert capabilities that we have, and sent out text messaging last night, leaned forward and said, hey, get out of there. And so we were trying to get people to really take the storm seriously. A lot of people did heed the warning, but then there are those who chose to stay behind. And unfortunately, first responders may not be able to go in and rescue those who dial 911 at this point.
Mr. President, can you give us a sense of the officials you've been in contact with and spoken to the governor?
I have, and the other governors, depending on what happens here, but they are all either contacted or are in the process. I had a long talk with Rick Scott, Governor Scott of Florida, very well coordinated with all of the states. And, you know, one of the things that must be said is it's not so easy for some of these people to leave. Some of the areas are very poor, not easy for a person without the necessary money to leave. So what we've done is we've sent buses, we've sent a lot of different, we're doing a lot of different things to try and remove people from the area, but a lot of people are very poor in certain of those areas, and it's very tough for them to leave. That's one of the problems you're finding, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, in some cases, you know, what we ask to do on Blue Sky Days is ask people who may not have the means or the mechanisms to get out of town to register with their local emergency management agencies, and Florida's been pretty robust in doing that so that we have some idea of how to pre-plan for that. And then, you know, we do what we can to be able to support the movement of people. When it comes to Georgia, you know, we're not evacuating for storm surge in Georgia. This is going to be high winds. So we're asking people to get within a facility that can withstand the winds and try to shelter in place or seek out public shelters that may be open in Southwest Georgia.
But if you look at the size, how long it is, take a look at that. And the red area basically is the area which is going to hit pretty heavily. And that's a lot of shore. It's a lot of land.
There'll be four feet in storm surge all the way down to Tampa Bay, which, as you know, is very low-lying and floods very easily. But to give you that idea of the breadth of its path, it is quite large.
It's almost the entire size of the Gulf. When you look at it topically, it's almost the entire size of the Gulf. And they haven't seen that. Maybe they haven't seen that at all. Nobody's seen that before.
The eye diameter is pretty wide, which unfortunately is not good news as it makes landfall. So some people may say it's similar to an EF3 tornado making landfall in areas that are close to the eye. So it's
did last year's hurricanes in the area impair the infrastructure or weaken it in any way that they would struggle to deal with this year's hurricane?
Not in this area. Irma did not really heavily impact the Florida Panhandle. Most of the hit from Irma was in the southwest portion of Florida, and then moved up through and created some issues in the Jacksonville area, northeastern portion. But this area, it's been a long time since it's been hit, so the vegetation hasn't been stressed, and we're going to see a lot of damage and devastation, unfortunately. And we have to set the citizens' expectations that the power is going to be out for a while. And what FEMA's role in that is, as the secretary was saying, our partnership with the private sector is that, you know, we work with the Florida Power and Lights, the Gulf Powers, the Southern Companies, the Georgia Powers, to be able to help them, you know, facilitate their mutual aid to come in. And they've got power crews coming in from multiple states across the country that are already pre-staged. And when we're hit, we work with them to do what's called first push debris to get the roadways open and so that we can get them down the roadways to start fixing the power. But that's going to take some time.
Mr. President, do you plan on changing any of your travel schedule?
Well, we don't know. I know I was going to Pennsylvania. It looks like there are thousands of people already lined up, and probably we'll do that tonight. And we're going to go down here as soon as we can. We don't want to interfere with anybody, but we want to go as soon as possible. You have, right.
All right, Howard. They kind of finishing up there with the update. Question: how many times did Brock Long say "lean forward"? Did that stand out to anybody? Like a nervous tick or something with him saying? Like I counted five different times, I think. If you're just catching up on the update here, I talked to staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams at the beginning of the hour, and Hurricane Michael now having made landfall. Mexico Beach, I know a lot of people from around here have spent time in Mexico Beach. That is where the landfall actually is occurring. The north eye wall, south eye wall coming, of course, afterwards, has not yet made landfall. Speaking of power, you heard the discussion of power crews. I know I got a note here from Alabama Power. They're staged and ready to go. I know Florida Power staged and ready to go. Baldwin EMC staged and ready to go. They're just waiting for the situation to get in there. And my gosh, at the number of trees, I can imagine they're going to have to clear to get in to do power work. Coming back, Michael Durant joins us next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. Reminder, right now, the eye wall has made landfall in Mexico Beach just to the east of Panama City. More from Dr. Bill coming up as we update the track as Michael now will stay together, at least in hurricane strength, through at least Albany, Georgia, is the last report we got, and we'll get the latest from the Florida Panhandle in just a little bit. Real honor to bring on the next guest here, who will be coming to town at the end of this month, Michael Durant. He is a master pilot, best-selling author, inspiration of the movie Black Hawk Down. Now you know the man I'm talking about. The pilot of the Black Hawk helicopter Super 64 that was fired upon and brought down during a combat operation in Mogadishu, Somalia. After that horrific street battle, he was overrun by a mob, captured, held prisoner for 11 days, badly injured, suffered from a gunshot wounds and a broken back, leg, and face. Turned his experiences into a powerful story of survival and motivation, and is going to be speaking to us here in our area about those lessons and how he turned it into being a leader and being a businessman. And I'll have to just say, an honor to have him on, a true American hero. Michael Durant, thanks for being with us.
That's my pleasure.
I want to talk about, first of all, that you are coming to town, and it's going to be here at the end of the month in Mobile, Thursday, October 25th at Fort Whiting. This a benefit for the Mobile Law Enforcement Foundation. But you are a speaker, but that, a man like you, that's not enough. You're a business person, you're a speaker, and of course, you are an American hero. And I'm thinking back to all those back in 1993 and what you experienced in Somalia that was put on the big screen. For so many in Black Hawk Down, and how that has now made you, are you the same man before that you are now, or was there a change at that point there in Somalia?
Yeah, I would say I'm not the same. I don't know how you could be, but I guess I took it as, it truly was, a near-death experience, and I think anyone that does go through that, whether it's a health issue or even something remotely close to what happened to me, you sort of come out the other side realizing that life is precious and your family's precious, and you got to live life to the fullest because you're not going to get a second shot at it. So I think it's made me less inhibited. I guess I was a special operations helicopter pilot. I wouldn't call that inhibited, but it even took it up another level, you know, to where to encapsulate it, I guess now I am no longer afraid to fail. I'll pretty much try anything because I realize I may not get another chance.
I mean, you have the Distinguished Service Medal, Distinguished Flying Cross, Oak Leaf Cluster, Bronze Star, Valor Device, Purple Heart, Meritorious Service Medal, 3 Air Medals, Prisoner of War Medal, and many others. And I think about that all those things you did, even before 1993, had, you know, a lifetime. You're doing special ops and you're doing flying of helicopters in very dangerous situations. What is it like now when you're coming to talk to us here at Mobile or you're presenting something for your business? It must seem like you said that. What fear would you have after doing what you had done?
Yeah, there's not much left. Although, as much as I hate to admit it, I am getting older, and I do think it starts to flip back the other way. You start to get a little bit more conservative. I don't know why. It's the opposite of what you would think. When you're young, you have more life left, and you would be maybe less risky, but you sort of look at life the other way around. When I come talk, it's everyone wants to hear my version of the story,
yeah.
You know, firsthand experience, so I do that. And then obviously try to weave in whatever is most relevant for the audience. And, you know, certainly in this case, it's a great cause. And, you know, a lot of the things that law enforcement organizations want to do, they can't use public money for, so they need donations and outside support, and that's what this is all about.
This is really an amazing opportunity for us to hear it from you and what it was like that day, because it's tough. I mean, to walk up, if, you know, we knew you personally, walk up and ask you about that day. I mean, we, you know, so many of us have family that are veterans, and it's tough to hear them talk about different things they experienced. This one, yours, is the most extreme of those stories, but yet you're willing to tell us.
And I think with any of us, there's a little bit of a reservation initially, but that faded pretty quickly because it became obvious to me that so many people wanted to hear it. And there was a great quote that I got from a public affairs officer early on when I was trying to decide, do I do it, do I not do it? He said, if you stick your head in the sand, there's only one thing left sticking out, and you can't control, you know, what people believe or think. So, you know, by speaking about it, you have an opportunity to help shape their thoughts about what they thought about the event and maybe answer any questions they might have.
I don't know how in-depth you can go into this just for a lot of reasons here, but afterwards, after you had recovered and from your injuries there in Germany, did you talk to other people in the Army or different divisions of the Armed Forces, kind of your experience to, and maybe this word's not right, demystify it to, you know, as people would be going into situations where they could end up in a situation like that? Did you talk to other members of the military?
Absolutely. You know, I think I've spoken to pretty much every organization that would have an interest in it, and that covers all military and law enforcement organizations. And I'm not alone. There's other, you know, notable survivors from the mission that have done the same thing and have shared, you know, their perspectives, which, you know, are as important as mine. One thing about it that I think we've all settled on, and I just heard it last week during the 25th anniversary memorial. I was at one of the special operations units, and the commander got up there, and he actually quoted me. He said that I had said some years ago that if Somalia never happens, then we as a nation are not as prepared for the war on terror, because there was a lot of things that we encountered, I wouldn't say for the first time, but sort of renewed the challenges involved in fighting an unconventional force, fighting in an urban area, fighting maybe people that don't have the advanced equipment and tactics that we use, but are, you know, highly trained and experienced at fighting in those domains, and are fighting for a cause, something they believe in that they will die for. And we spent the next 8 years preparing across the board. We went from a more heavy force to a more light infantry force, more mobile, and you know, more easily deployable, all of those things which are critical in our ability to fight the current wars that we face. So I think that's the redeeming quality of all of it. And the reason that occurred was the fact that we got out there and we talked about it, and we made sure that the planners that were getting us ready for the next phase of this nation's conflicts were, you know, able to hear firsthand the challenges that we faced that day.
You know, you think about 1993, and maybe people don't think about how that happened with us retooling, because what's always said that what the military is training to fight the last war, and pre-1993, I mean, we thought this was going to be the big battle in Europe, right? I mean, it was going to be the Russians and the us and our allies fighting maybe in a European theater.
Absolutely. It's called the Fold the Gap. That's the scenario that we'd spent decades preparing for, because it was the Cold War. We assumed that that was going to be the next big conflict, and it wasn't just Somalia. Panama was similar, and some other things that occurred, but it certainly was a catalyst in making us realize and appreciate that we needed to adjust things a little bit to be able to take on these current challenges.
Well, this is really your story from the book, from just hearing you speak in recorded form in the past. It is obviously a very compelling story, and folks can come out and join you. And also, I see you're going to have a special part of this for the gala, where people can actually meet with you and talk one-on-one. I think that's going to be super special as well.
Absolutely. I'm always happy to do that. And it is such a good cause. And in the end, it helps Mobile, it helps the community. So that's what it's all about.
And I also have to say, welcome to Alabama. Even though I'm not going to say, you know, New Hampshire a long way away, but you're now a citizen of the great state of Alabama.
I've lived in Alabama for 17 years, so yeah. I'm almost a local.
I'm not going to even ask you about football stuff. Start trouble there. Thank you for your time. Thank you for what you're doing for local law enforcement. And I can't wait to hear from you later this month.
All right. Sounds great. I appreciate it.
All right. Michael Durant, keynote speaker at the first Police Chiefs Gala. That is coming up October 25th at Fort Whiting, 6:30 to 10 o'clock. You can get ticket information by going to MobileLawEnforcementFoundation.com, MobileLawEnforcementFoundation.com, and you'll see the link there for the Police Chiefs Gala. Tickets $75 per person. Of course, this goes to help out the Mobile Police Department, Mobile Law Enforcement Foundation. And what a keynote speaker, Michael Durant. Yeah, just heard from him there. You'll hear it from him at length coming up Thursday, October 25th. Any more information you need on this, you can always contact us right here at FM Talk 106.5, and we're coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, we'll check back in with Dr. Bill. They're saying now, okay, 155 at landfall for Hurricane Michael. Just shy, I guess they're saying, just shy of a Cat 5. You know, quite often when we've seen those big storms get up against the coast in the past, I mean, Katrina was a prime example. Katrina was a 5, just a monster out in the Gulf, and actually was a 3 by landfall, but it had double eye walls and a whole bunch to it that made it even more complicated. But what Michael has done is just increase in strength. Of course, you had a situation where, if you know, you picture a hurricane like a locomotive, the water temperatures or the coal in the boiler there. And there was nobody on the brake, right? The shearing is the brake. And there's no hand on the brake, and there was plenty of coal in the boiler. And you know, here it is. And what devastation were we seeing? A few pictures and video coming in from the area around Panama City, also Mexico Beach, specifically being called landfall there. You know, I was thinking about this, too, with what the people are dealing with in the Florida Panhandle, and thinking about a service that my buddy Angelo and the whole crew there at Mobile Bay Coins offers, and I want to check in with him about that, because over the past, Angelo, we've talked about those free appraisals y'all do on collections and those kind of things, and if somebody has, you know, if they're going to insure something, whether it be for a hurricane or theft or something like that, they have to know what it's worth.
Right, it's something that's really, really important, and this is usually about the time people start thinking about it. You know, there's a hurricane in the Gulf, they're starting to stress or panic, and it's like, oh my gosh, do I have the insurance coverage I need? And part of having that for a collection is making sure you have an appraisal on that collection. And here at Mobile Bay Coins, we do free appraisals. So if you brought in your coin collection, your gold or silver bullion collection, we can offer you an insurance appraisal for that at no charge. And I'd suggest you take a copy of that appraisal, maybe a quick video of your items as well. Email that to yourself at your Yahoo account or whatever, you know, email account you're using. So even if you have to get relocated because of the storm, you can still access that and get that information to your insurance company.
Yeah, and it makes a big difference when you have an independent arbiter like Mobile Bay Coins giving you that value, and that's something we need to, I know, you're right, where everybody's thinking about it now, we need to think about it on a blue sky day, but, you know, at least maybe somebody might put it on their to-do list going forward.
Well, exactly. This should be an eye-opener for us, because we're not getting hit by this. You know, it looks like we're out of the zone. Thank goodness. But use this as a thing. Make out your to-do list and put on that list. Get my coin collection evaluated. Get my gold and silver evaluated. We need to be down at Mobile Bay Coins next week getting that done. And then call the insurance company and say, hey, I've got a $5,000 collection I need to get insured.
That's a really good thing for somebody to come out and see y'all and do. And while they're there, there's also, while that's going on, there's lots of stuff to check out on the gift and collectible side and precious metals.
Oh, there certainly is. As a matter of fact, we just got a shipment of knives in the other day. And fortunately and unfortunately, all the cool ones, we sort of do a team pick kind of thing where we pick some cool knives other than just the Open L. Well, I've sold almost all the cool knives. I've actually got to reorder those. Luckily, I ordered extra on the Open L, so I've still got some of those here for cool catch on.
All right. Tell us, if somebody for some reason has not been to Mobile Bay Coins, where is here?
We're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. And if you get turned around, call us at 725-1590. Or if you're a couch potato, look up Mobile Bay Coins on Facebook and like and follow us there.
Hey, thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins. Wow. Watching some of the, and watching this video too, you know, I kept focusing. I'm not saying I'm the only person that's been focusing on it, but I know how wooded, you know, the Florida Panhandle is. How many pine trees and you know, what it's like there. And just the raw wind speed of Hurricane Michael and how many trees will be down. I mean, you can think about what it looked like after Frederick here in Mobile, right? Let alone many other storms after. But Frederick was one of those that, while it was a big surge issue, you know, in some parts, it ended up being a bay drainer after a while. If you remember that? But then the tree damage in the city of Mobile from those winds. Same thing was true for Ivan and a couple other storms. But I'm looking at video right now, and this is coming in from, I think that's near Panama City. And yeah, looking at a section of trees, it looks like a parking lot, and you know, the woods kind of come up to the parking lot here. I see 1, 2, 3, 4 trees already snapped in this. I don't know how long ago this was. 41 minutes ago, the video was posted. So how long ago the video actually was taken? But you see the trees swaying and you see them popping. Now we're gonna, and of course, yeah, the metal pine trees are telephone poles knocked over as well. You got two things going on. You got the wind pushing on it that will snap trees, right? And then you have the other issue, as the rain gets in, soaks the ground, then you have trees get pushed over as well. This is more what I'm saying, the snapping of trees over there in the Florida Panhandle. And, of course, you think about all the homes out there that this could come down on. We talk about the power crews from Alabama Power, Baldwin EMC, Florida Power. They're going to try to get in and get power back on. But the roadways have to be cleared first. And nobody's moving yet because the storm is not completely onshore. Yet the south eye wall just now starting to come ashore there in Mexico Beach. And you look at the storm surge issues as well. I'll put a map up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 1065. See some of those predictions. You get, 14 feet of storm surge predicted for like an Apalachicola. Apalachicola's height above sea level, at least if it's somewhere in the city center, I guess, wherever they take the high point, is 13 feet. So that's the high point in town. It's 13 feet. So it's, and you think about all the places that are like Cape San Blas. Somebody was texting me about this morning, 2 feet above sea level. Those places there, Mexico Beach, I don't think they're 13 feet, would you? I mean, if people have spent time down there, are they 13 feet above sea level? So our prayers are with those folks to our east. I know a lot of them have evacuated here to the west in our area. The hotels are at full occupancy. I think we heard this morning when Kelly reported that. Full occupancy in Mobile. Baldwin County, remember, has not only has people in, you know, the hotels and elsewhere there, but they have opened up the shelter there in Robertsdale, the Coliseum. They can house, I think, 400 evacuees there. And right now, their doors were open as of this morning when we talked to Baldwin County Commissioner Chris Elliott. So I don't know if they're full, Dalton, if we can look, see if there's any update on that. Also, too, somebody had posted a story up about gas price rise. And, you know, that was a thing that was already happening, obviously driven by a couple factors. Supply always being the big one, demand with a burgeoning economy picking up, the prices going up. But in addition, you're going to have the issue of supply disruption. Now, it's not going to be as big a deal on refining because Florida Panhandle, unless somebody can correct me, I don't know that there are any. Are there any refineries on the Florida Panhandle? It's not like it hits Louisiana, hits Texas. It's not that kind of deal. But you have starting early yesterday or late on Monday, big oil producers like Anadarko, BHP, Billiton, BP, Chevron, started evacuating personnel from 75 different platforms in the Gulf. And obviously, those people are still on shore right now. 40% of the daily crude oil production has been lost over the last couple of days from the Gulf of Mexico wells. Also, the country's largest privately owned crude terminal, Louisiana Offshore Oil Port, which is down in Fouchon, Louisiana, they halted operations there. Said companies have turned off daily production of about 670,000 barrels of oil and 726 million cubic feet of natural gas. So that little bubble is going to work its way through the prices, I'm sure. 1258 FM Talk 106.5 coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile.